I saw the growth of assistant coaches go from 80 when I first took over in 2008, when I left 2014, to 160. We've got it all wrong, mate. We've got it all wrong.
We know the pranking, joking Danny Frawley, but we don't often get to see the serious one. But here, he's prepared to say that the footy industry has simply got it wrong in a few key areas. He reveals the hurt associated with Alistair Clarkson turning on him, as well as the subsequent learnings and appreciation of that period of his life. And he also couldn't help himself with a few jabs at some of his media mates. Our next guest on In The Game is a former player, coach, administrator, media commentator. I could keep going on and on and on, as he would probably like me to do, but he's demanded a seat at the In The Game table. Danny Frawley, welcome.
Damien Barrett, how are you going, mate? I'm not sure whether demanded is quite right.
You're very keen to come on.
My text machine for the last 3 or 4 weeks, come on, Spud, come on. My podcast, but I must admit...
I wanted your brand on this.
A little bit overawed, you know, Buckley, Dangerfield, pretty big shoes to fill here, mate. But anyway, my brand's going okay. I don't think I need to go into this, but I'm happy to have a bit of light and shade on this podcast because, as we know, we've worked together a long time.
Too long.
The Triple M days. And, yeah, your brand probably needs lifting somewhat, so I think me being
here... You're here to help me?
Yeah, with me being here today should sort of send you through to the... stratosphere that I'm in.
You're one of the first people in media to use the word brand a bit, yeah, to describe your standing with
it. And rightly so.
Hmm. How is the brand?
Well, it's going well. No, it's extremely well. It's, you know, The Bounce is the highest rating show on Fox Sports. We had our 350th show. I do a lot of work in the...
I started on The Bounce.
Yeah, I know. You did. You did way back 13 years ago when I had a different colour hair and you had some hair on your forehead. But anyway, we won't get personal today. But... No, look, I'm happy enough to do that show. And it's quite interesting. That show has been going for a long time. And I think people at times, I don't get frustrated with it, but it's a part of my night that I enjoy working for Jason. But someone, no, I do. But some people, and rightly so, that's all they probably see me, is that the way I am all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's good in a way, but I get frustrated at times where, you know, I was a captain of the club. I'm not here to blow my trumpet, but I was a captain for 9 years, all been a different time, you know. Show my age now, 7 out of the 9 years I still worked on the farm. So I think my journey as a football person from the early 80s to now has been one of, you know, success-wise on the field, not great, but I think I've made a hell of a lot of mistakes and I reckon I've got a fair bit to offer just in advice. Captain of a club for 9 years, seen the transition as a coach early 2000s to 2005 when it was semi part-time to nearly fully professional. By the time I left 2004, players were nearly full-time. A lot more guys were giving jobs away. And I just reckon we're in an interesting stage now in AFL footy.
Yeah, and the serious side to you is one that you don't often let people see, but people around you know that you do have it. And just with this conversation we're about to have, Spud, I reckon let's just bounce it around let's just keep it open. I've deliberately kept an open idea running sheet here, but there are a couple of things that are passionate in your mind, aren't they? And I'm happy to allow you the floor to speak about those topics. And we may as well start with the one that I know is a big one of yours and the amount of welfare now at a football club around the structure of the football department, how it's broken up, how it's divvied up, which resource gets the most money, which one gets the most time. And there's so many assistant coaches, so many people within a structure. But you've seen it from all angles now, player, outside viewer, assistant coaches recently as last year, or at least the helper.
Part-time.
Where are we going wrong with football?
Even as a CEO of the Coach Association, I saw the growth of that, and CEO could be a very liberal word, but I saw the growth of assistant coaches go from 80 when I first took over in 2008, when I left 2014, to 160.
Yep.
So the whole coaching landscape. So with that, that was just full-time coaches on the field per se. But then the growth of sports science and the like, we've got it all wrong, mate. We've got it all wrong.
So where's it wrong?
Well, a lot of people out there, and I look at Collingwood, for example, Jeff Walsh, we had him on the radio last week, he said the soft cap, and I totally agree with this. mental health / welfare of your player shouldn't come under the soft cap. Because the AFL, and Gil put it out there in the commission, the number one issue in our game right now is mental health. And a lot of people out there that probably don't know that I've had my own battles. I'm over them now, but I know exactly what a lot of players are going through. I've seen the growth of my playing career where I worked on the farm. We played in a great era where you could just be yourself. That's completely different now. I understand that. The amount of money in the game.
So when you say we've got it wrong, though, what is it we need to do to get it right?
It's going to take 2 or 3 years, in my opinion.
So you're in charge of this process. Yep. If indeed there was a role as such, yep, what do you do?
Well, it can't happen overnight. And so what needs to happen, in my opinion, is the soft cap, you can't sort of tax clubs if they're putting an extra clinical psychologist on, not a psychologist in team performance. I'm saying clinical psychologist, because a lot of people said, oh, it's great that 5 players have come out and had their mental health struggles this year. You can guarantee multiply that by at least 10 to 20. And I'm at the coal face. I've been at St Kilda.
I wouldn't disagree with that number from what I've been told by clubs.
And the sports science, and I'll get smashed by this, the weight coaches, the fitness coach, sports science, conditioning coaches, their wages ballooned out of proportion compared to what the issues are. So let's say the soft cap stays in and it's there for all the right reasons. Clubs have to then prioritise, because I think every club right now would say mental health is the number one issue. Yet they're putting about 5% of their football department spend into that and about 25% into sports science conditioning staff.
And just for the layman who's listening to this, Danny, when you say outside the soft cap, I'll just quickly retrace
that.
At the moment, there's a tax applied to any club which goes over the allotted figure they're allowed to spend in all forms of
and
football.
And you're probably
department.
Talking the top 4 or 5 clubs.
Yeah.
Collingwood, West Coast,
yep.
Essendon, Hawthorn.
And some still don't reach it. And if you do reach it, you then tax at 100%. You can go over it.
That's right.
But no club has since they've introduced this soft cap. And what you're arguing here is to have the clinical psychologist taken outside of that
spot
constraint.
On.
Okay.
And some
are you
clubs,
sure this won't be rorted like everything else in football ultimately is?
Well, you would, if it's rorted, tip tie the guy who's running that department straight out the door. Because if you're trying to rort an issue such as mental health, you shouldn't be in that role.
Mm.
So I would have thought the number one thing is a footy ops. And I admire guys like David Noble and Steve Hocking before he became footy ops. Their number one role is to get the welfare department right, because an AFLPA and the AFL do a pretty good job, but a day and a half a week off in season, it's sort of 4 hours here, 3 hours there, 5 hours here. By the time they get in and out of their car, they're basically not doing a lot other than playing footy. So the Paddy Dangerfields are the exception, not the rule. His passion is his family and his fishing. He loves his footy, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Mm.
But right now we've got 85% of footballers, and you ask them what they do and they say, I'm a professional footballer. I think that's really unhealthy. I really do. And the amount of time we see these guys getting extra time, the question I ask them continually, what are you doing that extra time?
It's not going to change, though, the way I see it. The way the clubs demand players be under their watch. And while they publicly, and I think genuinely as a starting point, want the best for the individual, ultimately they are being judged on the win-loss.
Yep.
So therefore their decisions are impacting upon how they treat the individual.
No, and I understand that too, because I'm a big believer in the staff as well have got their own issues mentally. So everyone's got mental health. Everyone has. Mental illness comes in all varying forms. Some people get a grain of sand. Some people get the full hourglass. I was probably a couple of grands off the full one, as you rightly know, and you supported me through that. So it comes on you when you least expect it. And staff, when they lose more, they're at the club earlier. They leave later. Why don't the staff have a day and a half off during the week as well? Because, and the players, don't get me wrong, we freshen them up to play games, but sometimes you look at the coaches on the replay and they've got big bags under their eyes. Where's their freshness come from? Where does their balance? But no one's twisting their arm to do it.
I was
going to
say,
no one's twisting
ultimately
their arm.
They're choosing to do it. They're aspiring to do it.
Yes.
And they do it.
And they do it because it's
so there's a balance there too, isn't there?
No, there is.
We can't feel too sorry for people who are reaching and achieving success in the elite field.
Because I'm quite fortunate that I actually had a mental health issue, because my balance now is something I enjoy doing. I got a farm, I got my daughters, I coach some community footy, and I'm lucky enough to work in the media in the weekend. How long that lasts, that will be, it's not the be all and end all. 5 years ago, if I had have gone and my media career is gone, I'd fall on a heap. It doesn't worry me anymore. So the word balance, as you rightly said then, what is it? Clubs say, oh, they're having a day and a half off. But what, that's not a balance. Are you ticking off a tertiary degree just because you're ticking a box?
I reckon they do that.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah. And I'm with you. But is it something that's going to help them?
That many footballers who've gone and got a pilot's license just because it's cool to do and they've got no intent of actually living it out. But it ticks the box to go and do something.
You know, the rooftop. And I coach the Vic Country team, so I know I'm going here, there and everywhere. But these guys play and why I love it, because it's raw and it's real. These guys are carpenters, bricklayers. They love their footy. They're coming together as a group. They would love to be able to give that carpentry away to a certain degree to play AFL footy full time.
And that's the.
But and then they read, oh, gee, it was a tough season. I'm going overseas for 3 months to travel Europe every year. That is a very unreal existence for the average Australian.
Mm.
And I think we've got it wrong. I think that
have we got it wrong when it comes to how the game is coached too? But to move on to one of your other topics, and that being one that recently, and you've discussed this long before you actually posted something on social media. It was a screenshot of a coaching setup within a game, and there was a 15 or so assistant coaches or attached people to a club all with their laptops open during a game in a coach's box. Have we got that side of it wrong?
No, we have, because, again, coaches have to justify their existence. When Lockett Dunsell and people listen to this and say, oh, gee, Danny's a dinosaur. But I've seen the whole spectrum of it. We travel down to Carr from Ballarat. We had a bit of fun on the way home. We played hard. We trained pretty hard when we had to, but then we had all our jobs. Right now, coaches spend probably 65% of their time on analysis of the opposition. Now, I look at it as...
It might even be more than that.
It's probably... I look at a horse trainer. If a horse trainer is going to train a horse and put it in a race, let's say there's 15 in the race, if he spends most of his time analysing the 14 horses that his horse is up against, he's not going to be in the game very long. You have to get that horse to run at its absolute peak. These horses are elite animals. They're elite athletes. He has to be trained to the minute. It's no different to AFL. We spend more time on how can we knock down the opposition. I'll give you a couple of stats, and I don't like stats, but my mate Ash Chua threw a couple at me, as we know, at my former employee, Triple M. Most games at the moment, for three quarters, are a bit of a snore fest.
Mm.
There's about 6-7, 8-10, and there's some big games, so don't get me wrong. There's always terrible games in the 80s and 90s. Just go down to Moorabbin, I can tell you what, there's some ordinary games there. But at three-quarter time, all of a sudden the coaches go, we need to win. Let's take the game on. And there's just as many goals scored in the last quarter as the first three. And I look at Brad Scott leaving North, and I look at Brendan Bolton. They both left for differing reasons. And the two guys that have come in, Reece Shaw, all of a sudden they average two more goals a game. David Teague, under Brendan Bolton, they've gone up four goals a game. And a lot of those games, in this podcast, Cripps wasn't playing. So they've had three scores of over 100 points, yet for 3.5 years before it, they were lucky to have that in 3.5 seasons. I've got colleagues in league land, as of you. Those two clubs in particular spend no time whatsoever on opposition analysis, very little.
But that's not real either, is it?
Well, it's not real. Let me finish, because it's real, but it's not real, because they haven't got the win-loss
pressure,
win-loss spectre hanging over their head as a coach who's got a 2 or 3 year contract.
Got nothing to lose right now.
Nothing to lose right now. So my point being, they're attractive to watch. When this podcast has gone to air, Reece Shaw's 4-1, Teague's nearly 3-1. Their scoring's gone through the roof. Because those two coaches in particular have said to the players, look, it's not about me, it's about you guys. You need to express yourself out in the field. Because I'd love to be able to coach you next year, but I'm not. But some other coach might be watching. And the clubs actually love the brand that they're putting out at the moment.
Yeah, but I would argue, though, that the moment a caretaker becomes a permanent coach, that carefree, open-it-up mentality goes out the window.
I was getting to that.
And they've then gone from having nothing to lose to having almost everything to lose. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment, because I was about to get to that, Damien, before you
jumped in.
But you're absolutely spot on, because Paul Ruse wasn't going to get the Sydney job, but all of a sudden he won six games and they put him in. He played attractive style. When Ruse came in, it was the defensive strangle. Sydney won ugly all the time, and Ruse still cracks it a little bit with that. But the facts are he changed his dynamic of the way he thought.
Straight away, didn't he?
Yeah. And Reshaw and Teague will do that. So my point being, Steve Hocking and the Laws of the Game Committee do an outstanding job. Last year, Steve got a whole breadth of people, media personnels. Were you one of them?
No.
What was the committee called?
Look, there's been a couple of committees formed, but I know the one you mean. He took advice and met a lot of people.
The coaches own the game of AFL football.
Absolutely.
Not the players play. The spectators watch, but the coaches dictate the way the game's played, no one else.
Tell us what's happened there, because it hasn't been the result I don't think anyone wanted this year when it came to the real changes. Now, the 666 setup has worked, but the problem with that is you need a goal to be scored for it to actually be enacted. And as you pointed out a few moments ago, we're getting to three-quarter time without a lot of goals scored. So we get this frenzy in the last quarter. What needs to happen, either through more rule changes, but in your eyes, given you're coming from a player, coach, media, administrator's perspective, either the rule changes themselves or can you do something by way of analysing what is happening to the game to fix it?
A bit like the mental health issue, the whole game on field needs to be, we'd love to be able to just put a pause and have an audit, get all the coaches in a room, and all due respect, forget media people like me who used to coach and you, maybe a few players, but the coaches dictate the way the game's played.
But so they're not going to change those, but I mean, even as we speak, the annual coaches gathering at Gillon McLaughlin's house has only recently been held, and that is not going to change anything. Because when they go back out there on the weekend, they'll do whatever they can to get the 4 points. So I'm sympathetic to their cause. Having said that, I agree with you saying when you say that they are the reason the game is the way it is.
And when I coached many moons ago, I'll take 1 year in particular, 2001, we finished third. Our percentage was 101. So we won ugly a lot of the times. We didn't win by much, we didn't lose by much, and we had a stifling, pretty hard-nosed, boring style. But you know what? It was my greatest achievement as a football person to get that list, albeit not good enough against Brisbane and Essendon.
To third.
Yeah, to third. So my point being with that is I was paid to perform.
Yeah.
And the best way I could perform with that list is to knuckle down.
Okay, but this gets to the point. What needs to happen? If you're Steve Hocking in this situation between 2019, and we're stuck with that this year, nothing can be done now, what do you do going into 2020? Given your knowledge of the game.
Well, what I've seen in the scoring in last quarters, and people say it's a bit of junk time, but I'm talking where the games are one goal the difference, and there's been a lot of goals scored in the last quarter. Fatigue makes cowards of everyone.
Mm.
Scoring was very good in the early 2000s before Chris Connolly got the interchange to go berserk. And Chris doesn't get the credit he deserves because it went from 20 to 30 up to 80. He just went whooshka. And then Mick in the late 09s, 10s, took it to the nth degree where we had 180. You know, there was four interchanges in the first minute. So you've got, anyway, I'm showing my age, and the conditioning staff again. The coaches need to coach, and they need to bring the interchange back to 50. It's as simple as that.
Okay, so that'd change it, would it?
Well, not to a certain degree, because then coach will say, you're fatigued, where were you run? Behind the ball.
Mm.
We had the flooding early 2000s.
Wouldn't they potentially block it down even more with that?
Yep, and I also asked, and so coaches need to be somehow given.
Does it maybe need to go to the 666 at every stoppage, which was mooted this time last year as
or
a possibility?
Or three after centre bounce, maybe?
Yep.
At least three.
At least three. But something has to be done, doesn't it?
No, something has to be done. It's an interesting scenario, the whole lot, but to me, the interchange needs to come down, and you probably need to see some practice matches doing that. There's no doubting that.
All right, another one of the ones you wanted to talk about, Spud, when you demanded a seat in the game. The Saints, and again, let's not get too specific about Alan Richardson's situation, but it must be frustrating to watch the continual underperforming of your team.
Look, I was there
when you were there when you've not
there. Yeah, no, exactly right. I saw a huge spike, and Richo is the right coach for the right time, but the graph, unfortunately, has gone backwards since they had the 12 wins. And that's not great for a coach. So I look at it, if I was coaching Bungaree and I'm coaching them into their sixth season and haven't participated in the finals, let's be brutally honest, there's eight teams get the chance to participate in finals every year. Richo's now six seasons, and it looks like, I'm not sure when this goes to air, but it doesn't look like they're going to play the finals. But in his year this year, it's actually been a pass mark.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of senior players out. A heap. So from that point of view, he's done a really good job. But the issue when you see Ben McAvoy plays 200th game for Hawthorn, I get crook in the guts. Because I kept asking the questions, what was wrong with Ben McAvoy? And they said, he came third and fourth in all the runs. He's a hard worker, a great leader, very, very humble. And most ruckmen come good when they're 27 to 31. That's why Sydney had their success by just cherry-picking young ruckmen, because they're a bit gangly when they're young. For the life of me, why Ben McAvoy is not, and all due respect to Jaron Geary, why Ben McAvoy right now is not captain St Kilda has got me absolutely beat. So those issues from, you know, the list manager, the recruiting, and I love the fact that they've got Billy Slater there from rugby league. We've had some cricket administrators down there. It's essentially a footy club. We've got and I love the diversity, but the Saints people, and I'm a supporter now, want to see a footy club that is a football club. And it's tough for those guys, the board, the CEO, they've got a spectre of a huge debt right now. They've got a great facility. It's one of the magnificent facilities, but I just think we've lost our way a little bit. And having a game here, a game there. We walked out on Tassie. I just can't believe it. You heard the crowd a couple of weeks ago when Saints played North Melbourne. There was just as many St Kilda supporters there. Why? Rewalt comes from there. The late Daryl Baldock is another generation away, but there's a lot of 40, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds. Saints walked out of Tassie where we own Tassie. We walked out of Ballarat. That was St Kilda's zone. We walked out of Ballarat from 77 to 1988, out of those 12 years, and there wasn't a lot of success, but 10 of them best and fairest winners were from Ballarat. We walked out of Ballarat. I don't get those short-term decisions. We're back at Moorabbin, so we've got something to hang our head on now. But we've got a hell of a lot of work to do. And the late Tommy Hafey told me when I went to Richmond, Spud, you'll coach well, but the winning's in the pickings. And unfortunately, our draft picks haven't come home to roost. It's as simple as that. And I'm not going to sit here and individualise, but we haven't done a very good job at all. My God, the godfather of my youngest daughter is Noel Judkins. I'm really good friends with Stephen Wells. Those two guys have just unbelievable the way they can pick talent. Noel still works for Essendon, and rightly so. He recruited the 2000 premiership team. Go back and have a look at that list, and he cherry-picked every one of them. We, unfortunately, have had too many guys that probably haven't had the right skill set at the right time. It's as simple as that. I think Andrew Bassett's going to be very good for our club, but he's going to have to get down and get his hands dirty.
Mm.
I think he's going to have to get involved in all aspects of the club if he wants the success, because he's a very successful businessman and he's hard-nosed.
As we sit here, and I don't know when this will be published, Spud, but Alan Richardson is still coach, and I don't think anyone in footy expects him to be coach, as harsh as that sounds, next year. Who should be?
I'm not going to get involved in that, because You tell me that there's some sort of clause there. So I'm not really here to – I'm not going to sit here and talk about Alan. Alan right now, as this podcast is going to air, and he's got coach. A contract next year.
And mathematically, as we speak, can still make
it. Can still make it. So sorry about not giving you a headline there, mate.
Okay, fair enough. The learning, Spud, of mistakes in – in life and the ones you've made in footy, how important are they? And sometimes when we talk on this on this podcast, we just like to delve into the learnings of people. And you've always spoken of the positive that comes out of the negative of the mistake.
Yeah, I think everyone deserves an opportunity. I think AFL is a very good forgiver, as long as you don't make the same mistake. And I reckon I've made 1,000 mistakes through my time as a player, coach, administrator, media personality. Got myself in hot water. There's no, you know, we don't want to go over old ground, but you got to learn from those mistakes. And times have changed. There's no doubting that. We live in a completely different era to what I did in the 80s, 90s, even 2000s. I reckon the landscape for my daughters is moving so quick in the commerce space, the iPhone. You know, I heard the other day, this is quite interesting, there's a phone out there, and I won't mention the brand, are going to have a dual face. So you can actually look at your emails on one side of your phone and text on the other. Gee, that's great for your mental health and your balance, isn't it? So you can do...
Well, you'd have no hope of hooking that up.
No hope. I've got fingers like sausages, mate. But that to me says that how much is too much?
Mm.
We live in a very... And you live in a... You know, you've got a really good job here. You do a great job in the media, but... I'm sure the way you sort of portray stories, you've got to be very careful
how you used to
portray them a few years ago.
No, absolutely. And I think all of us, not just media, but everyone needs to, I think, work backwards from the outcome of the decision you make. And obviously with a media perspective on this conversation, work backwards from that story being published in whatever form it is published in. And I think you need to go down a few steps to work out what can happen. And you know me well enough to know, Spud, that once there's a mental health component to any issue, it's something you don't touch. And I think that sort of gets back to what you're saying about the changes. What about the relationships you've had? I mean, you were really, really tight with Alistair Clarkson, and I think you are again.
Yeah.
But there was a – I hope you don't mind me asking.
No, ask.
But it was a situation when you were on the Coaches Association, and he – tell me if I'm right or wrong, but drove change in that space. And and that obviously impacted on you in many ways. How do you deal with that? Someone who you were really close with, having a role in your demise in that position and obviously affecting you the way it did?
No, it did. So at the end of – it was when the Essendon scenario came on, the story that you obviously broke early 2013. I was the CEO of the Coach Association. So Neil was the CEO, got the job at West Coast. I was in the media at that stage at 2008, and it was funny enough, I did some part-time work with Alistair. And he wanted me as a full-time coach, even though they won the flag in 2008.
Yep.
Came knocking on my door again.
Because you were at the club, at the Hawks in that premiership year.
It was a couple of the best years I had because I saw the whole transformation. I got the after-day one with Crowd and Brown and, you know, I wasn't sort of going behind Alistair's back, but I said, this is not going to work, this zoning space. Mm-hmm. And I think Jared called it the cluster. I said, come on, guys, let's go and do some one-on-one down
Jared
here.
Jared Healy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway... After a couple of weeks, I thought, this is actually something groundbreaking. Went over to Fulham, I think, soccer club, spent a couple of seasons over there and came back with this magnificent idea, and he had the best kicking team in the competition. So in a sense, to see the evolution from 6, 7, 8 when I was there, when he was battling a bit, to see 7 make a final, and then 8 actually win it, was something that was amazing. So Alistair, then I was put in as a brand. Let's be brutally honest, my brand wasn't as big as it is now. But because I had a profile in the media, the Coaches Association needed a bit of, not clout in a corporate sense, because I couldn't give you that.
Well, Andrew Demetrio came and got you, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And it was quite...
And you can probably draw that line with Clarkson too, because
they're
good
mates. Andrew was a beauty, because I was the CEO of the Coaches Association. He also wanted me to go on the board of GWS. And I said to Andrew, that could be a bit of a conflict.
I reckon it might be.
But he said, no, you'll be right. And I said, no, I don't think that's going to work. But I was wrapped with the opportunity they gave me. But I was essentially a huge marketing type person. And I had the communication skills to get the 18 coaches at least to try and come up with one uniformed decision, which is pretty difficult if you've got 18 bulls in one paddock.
Can I be honest with this? And I wasn't going to go down this path, but I don't get it, the Coaches Association. I don't get one thing that they're actually aligned on, because they can sit around a table and go, yeah, let's do this, let's do that, and let's fight for this. But ultimately they leave that room and they're all individuals.
Yeah,
no, and they'll take each other's jobs if they're...
Very, very good point. But behind the scenes, the transition is something that's really improved. The professional development has really improved.
The bigger picture.
The growing of the game, the bigger picture, yes. But come game day, they've got huge egos. So I can understand that. But they've done a hell of a lot of good. So when the Essendon thing came on the surface, a lot of people, there was a lot of residue. And there's no more than me, because at this, exactly the same time, Alice could see that probably my media role was getting bigger. And my work ethic into the CEO Coach Association wasn't where he thought. And him and Horse and Rossi Lyon decided to have a review, which I called at the AGM. And that's when my life totally came out of control. I'm not saying that was the tipping point. It was, but if it wasn't that, it was going to be something else.
Sure,
But when it first happened, I thought Alistair's being a little bit over the top here and should have worked it through where I could do the review. So we got an independent review, got John Worsfold involved, who wasn't coaching at that stage, and Mark Brayshaw to do the review. And the review came in that they needed someone with more compliance, governance, with maybe a finance background or a lawyer background. I had neither of those, but I still thought that maybe I could have a role, because I was quite passionate about it in the marketing sense, but my mental health got way out of control. I resigned, but there's no doubt if I hadn't resigned, I would have been moved sideways. So when that come tumbling down, as did a lot of people involved in that Essendon scenario, but I don't blame that for 1 minute, because it would have been something else the way my life was at that stage, because I just lived on the life of a treadmill, had too many hats in the air, and I was conflicted. I think even you brought up, you know, even a couple of our leading journos, and they were absolutely spot on at the time. Caroline Wilson and Patrick Smith wrote big articles that Danny's conflicted. Here he is on the bounce acting like a clown. And then during Monday and Tuesday, dealing in litigation, lawyers, and I wasn't ready for it. The AFL wasn't ready for it. And my mind definitely wasn't ready for it.
And with that too, you obviously had pressures from Essendon itself. I think they wanted you to be more sympathetic to whatever they had done. Oof. And is it fair to say you had a reasonably harsh view, and I think fairly enough, on what they had done, and therefore weren't deserving necessarily of the support they felt they needed? And I'm talking about just from the structural support here.
Yeah, structural support. It was quite interesting. I was actually on an island, because I had Clarko and Ross and all the other coaches saying, how can you deal with the Essendon coaches? But what number one thing in our values mission statement was to look after the welfare of the person, correct the behaviour, but look after the person. It was out there that I was working a couple of laps of the tan with James. I want to know how his welfare was. And then they wanted more support, but they really couldn't tell us what happened. So that was really frustrating.
And you had your own views too, I'd imagine.
I had my own views.
Which were reasonably harsh and fairly...
Very harsh. And there's a couple of coaches there that had nothing to do with the scenario whatsoever, and a couple of footy admin, and they got tiptoed out of the joint. They're never back involved in footy, so that's quite sad. I could see Bomber, unfortunately. He was... I could see his whole demeanour change, and there's no doubt he's got to stand up for himself and what he believes in right now, because he's going through a tough time, but... There's no doubt that impacted on him. So for 3 years there, I did. I have a huge grudge against Alistair and Mark Brayshaw to a certain degree, because he did the interview, independent review, and he took over CEO. So I was left without that job that I loved. But when I came out the other side, I actually could see what they were trying to do. I wanted to do the right thing by the association. They still wanted to look after me, but at that stage, they had no idea that I had some mental health issues. So we've patched things up. I reckon he's a star, Alistair. He's the best coach in the probably ever, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
There's not many people can do.
You could mount
the
case strongly, couldn't you?
No doubt. Because, and all due respect to the past, you know, it was trained twice a week, play, and there was probably three or four teams that were probably that year a chance to win it. Now we've got 18 teams in the competition, so he's a freak.
Don't want to make this too heavy, but the practice of giving a person in football a spray and the benefits of it, is it just about out the window now?
No, it's out the window.
Do you think it could, under certain circumstances, be brought back in now as a positive?
You have to really get inside the individual's head. And the Richmond players would tell you, I drove a pretty hard bargain if they didn't do the right team thing. And it got personal. I can remember through the 80s, players getting delisted off a list on the training track and during a game. Can you believe that?
Mm.
In the early 80s.
It was easier, wasn't it, to move on?
Players were moved on off the training track and in one particular game. So from that point of view, so I coach my daughter's team and I coach a Vic Country team. There's no doubt the adage now is an ounce of praise weighs more than a ton of criticism. But back in the day, coach would tell you to run through the wall. You did it.
But that's not in your nature. And I don't say that as a criticism.
But I've had to
change.
It's
who you are. It's how you're wired.
Yeah, I know. I'm
and you're proudly that way.
But still deep down, I'm like that Monty Python film. I got no arms and no legs, but I'll bite your kneecap off. But that doesn't survive in today's society.
There's no place for it now, is
there? No, there is. I got a few mates in the bush, and we go fishing, we go camping. You can be yourself in that environment.
Yep. But not as coach of any organisation now.
No, not a coach or a leader.
And that's the right way to be, isn't it?
That's the right way to be. We're very diverse. And I appreciate that. And I've moved, you know, I've got, as I said, three beautiful, loving daughters. And the way society's been able to embrace all walks of life has been outstanding. And AFL, to their credit, have been a really big driver of that.
Mm.
But there's always a but with me. Never get away from the fact that a footy club is a footy club. Let's not be the total arbitrator for life itself.
Has it gone too far in that regard?
It has, yeah. Because we need the girls from my footy team to be themselves on the training track and in the club rooms on their own. They need to express themselves. They don't need to have Big Brother looking over their shoulder. You need to express yourself in A, B, C or D, because that's the way you can make mistakes.
Mm.
And not be... Now we make a mistake as a player. They say, they're not saying anything to the media. They say something, we just go, whack. What did I do that for? So we've got to be very careful, because to me, my three daughters are very well educated, but the biggest education they got was through sport.
Right.
And in particular, team sport.
And one of them right now, Spud, Keely, youngest,
she's
is overseas.
In Portland University, very proud of her. 19-year-old. Gee, I didn't leave mum's apron strings till I was 26. To move down to Melbourne. So she's 19 on the other side of the world, went over on her own. So I'm quite proud of her fulfilling her dreams over there. I miss her terribly. She's the youngest. So we've got to be – footy's footy, but we don't want to be, as I said, take over the jobs of governments. The police, for example, let them do their job. And I think Ross Lyon always – I really like Ross. Let the cobblers cobble. But at times, I reckon the AFL, we want to get involved in everything. But it's a footy club.
Is it too big, though, now to wind back?
No, it is. No, you can't wind that back. But I still want a place where my daughters or grandsons, if I'm lucky to have some, and granddaughters, can go to a sporting environment with their mates, have a kick, be themselves, and not have any retribution from it other than the coach and maybe the people involved in the club. But now everyone, if someone does, like, for example, and whether it's good, bad or otherwise, the social media, the Twitter, if someone does something, a lot of people getting in arms and they don't even know what they're talking about, but they heard it secondhand.
Mm.
That is my biggest issue. And I understand the delicate nature of our society in Australia. You know, you go to Europe and you've been to, you know, New York now and again, it's completely different because it's a big place over there.
Well, people move on.
People move on. We have got and rightly so, we've got a lot of money in our game because people talk about it, people go and watch, people listen, a lot of people getting employed. So it's an outstanding entity to be involved in, and I'm still lucky to be involved in it in a small way. But also know now my balance is back in the farm, coaching my daughters, coach the Vic Country lads. You know, it's quite interesting just on that one, the Vic Country, the state of country football. I just hope the AFL, I know if AFL Vic are doing a pretty good job under duress. We're very lucky right now that the power of the women's footy has really strengthened the numbers.
Yeah, right.
Country football, you only got to look through the country leagues, mid-Murray, where you see a lot of towns have just got, instead of playing each other, they've amalgamated their name.
Yeah.
Which is a bit sad. And, you know, we play the amateurs. It's quite interesting. There's seven country footballers playing for the Vic amateurs team. But I can understand why, because there's no jobs in the bush. So they come down. The amateurs have got a great network and it's a great institution. But a third of their team are country boys.
Mm.
That wouldn't have happened 20 years ago, so we do have to move on.
You've gone half an hour here now without, or at least half an hour without really bagging anyone. Do you want to finish up with a couple of sprays on?
Yeah, well, I'd like to know. I'm going to name drop here, and I don't normally do that, but I'm pretty close friends.
Yes, you do.
I'm pretty close friends with Tim Warner through a dual best mate, David Hall, who trains horse in Hong Kong.
I reckon I know where you're going here.
Tim Warner is the head of, now you'll get the name right, Channel 7, but it's a bigger than that. It's
Seven West, is it?
Seven West.
West Media, yeah, whatever
so
it is.
So Tim runs the whole show. Mm. And one of his lieutenants is Lewis Martin. And Lewis Martin is the head of Seven Sport. So right now, the great Bruce McAvoney is in the twilight of his career. And he's winding down. But what I've seen from afar is the names of James Brayshaw, Brian Taylor, Nigel Carmody.
Hamish.
Jason Bennett.
Nigel Carmody.
Yep. Barry Zemplis. Who is the godson?
Basil, maybe.
Well, Basil, sort of. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, Basil. who else have we got? That's probably it. So
BT.
I said Brian. So all these guys right now, a bit like what you
Duke?
Said.
Duke.
Luke Basil. Oh, gee, I've mudflap. See that again. So these guys are like those coaches you talked about in the room. They're all happy. They're all with each other. But as soon as they walk out the door, I want Bruce's job. Now, Tim Warner said to me the other day there was an extra expense item that came through the audit finance committee.
It's better be funny, Spud.
No, at Seven West. It was two sets of hinges off Lewis Martin's door because Brian and JB, seriously, get out of there, guys. Leave Lewis and Tim to make the decision who will take over. Going in, trying to buy him a coffee is not going to get the job done. And you know exactly where I'm coming from.
Who gets that job?
Probably JB.
Yeah, I think so.
He's as sharp. Yeah, he's sharp. He's going to get the job.
And what about Chief before you go?
Yeah, well, Chief.
Your bounce co-host.
Yeah, Chief, he's a different man, isn't he? His head's imploded into his body. I've thickened up, but he's, seriously, I thought the other day.
Did he speak to anyone between Sunday nights?
No, he does not. I thought he's been stung by 1,000 bees. But his ideal day is to sit up in his unit, Eureka Tower, and not speak to anyone. People say, why don't you bring Chief down here?
He's genuinely happy, though, and I admire that.
Chief is one of the happiest, grumpiest Grinches I've ever met. I'm not sure whether I could say a close friend, but gee, what a great opportunity I get to get paid and sit side onto that scone. He doesn't even need a baseball cap because his brow is probably 4 inches over his eye sockets. It's quite bizarre, that cranium. So people say, why do you laugh? Well, just sit there and have a look at his scone. I can tell you why. But he's very intelligent.
He is, actually.
Never play Scrabble with the Chief. No. He can come up with some words.
He's got everyone covered on that.
Well, he actually, you know, the whole Elsa Clarkson thing wouldn't have happened without him.
Mm.
There's no doubting that.
Yep.
He's a freak. And chairman of the winning Big Bash team as well, the Renegades.
Mm.
So he's been on the board of Hawthorn and just resurrected the whole club. Probably had more impact as a board member at Hawthorn than he did as a player. And he played in four flags and second or third on the all-time goal-kicking list. So I don't, yeah, we don't put this bit to air. But I do love him, but I don't want to tell him that.
On that note, Spud, we may as well wrap up our little chat today in the game. And thanks for coming in.
No, it's been great, Warrior. Good luck with your brand. Keep it going. I noticed you were hosting Classified the other night. You've probably got to look down the lens just on the side and move your head a little bit more. You're sort of looking straight down the lens.
Listen, if I need TV lessons, they won't be coming from you.
You look like when Tim Watson first started at Channel 7, you're like a rabbit in a spotlight. Your eyes just sort of open up like fish bowls and just sort of move a little bit and sort of caress yourself.
Tim's improved.
Well, he had to. Anyway,
I think it's
sorry
time
about
for
that,
you,
Tim.
To
no, we better go.
Thanks.
Good on you, mate.